incredibly important presentation, and it's an honor to follow that and to speak on a panel with these speakers. And I want to thank the students who put this together, and in particular, I also want to thank my friend Barbara Cummings, who's been talking about bringing this to Yale for as long as I can remember. I want to change it up a little bit and be fair and balanced and say a few words in defense of our presidents.
One word?
George Bush had absolutely no idea that he and his staff were promoting lies about Iraqi weapons and ties to 9/11 and punishing anyone in the administration who spoke against those lies. George Bush had no way of imagining that so many experts who predicted that Iraqis would resist the foreign occupation would turn out to be right. George Bush, we know from recent reporting, had absolutely no ability to conceive of the damage that would result from Hurricane Katrina. And so I've been thinking that someone ought to have told Bill Clinton, you don't go out there and say, I did not have sex with that woman. You say, I had no way of imagining what could happen if she crawled under my desk. Fox News had a headline. They have these headlines on their little two-minute segments recently. It said, all-out civil war in Iraq, could it be a good thing? Well, presumably it could, from the point of view of the Bush-Cheney gang, if it gets in the way of all-out resistance to the occupation. That is, Bush almost certainly would prefer to see Sunnis fighting Shias than to see a united fight against Americans and collaborators. In any case, the war cannot be resolved without, you know, well, let me say this, from the point of view of the Iraqi people, and the people of the Middle East, and the people of the United States, either type of civil war, a sectarian war or a war primarily against the occupation, is nothing but more very, very bad news. And either type of war or a combination of the two, it makes sense to call a civil war, because it is primarily Iraqis doing the killing and the dying, and it is primarily civilians doing the dying. In any event, the war cannot be resolved without the U.S. soldiers leaving. Only leaving provides a chance for a peaceful solution.
And yeah.
Financial aid for reconstruction combined with assistance from the United Nations could increase the likelihood of a democratic and peaceful Iraq. But there are no guarantees except that the present course will continue to make things worse. The idea that the U.S. occupation must continue because things would get worse if it ended is clearly not what the White House actually cares about behind closed doors. But taking that claim on its own merits, it quickly falls apart. Things in Iraq have been getting steadily worse during the occupation, and the escalating violence is driven largely by anger at the occupation. After 3 years and $250 billion, infrastructure, water, and electricity are worse than before the war. Investment is going into prisons, oil pipelines, and waste at Halliburton, yep. And there is no functioning government even able to police the streets. Security is being privatized, and assassinations and torture are everyday occurrences. Excuse me. Most of the corpses in Baghdad's mortuary show signs of torture and execution, and much of it appears to be done by groups working for the government. Meanwhile, the United States government lacks the moral authority even to speak, because there is no behavior so foul that we are not engaging in it. We are also aggravating sectarian tensions that have historically been fairly low. The longer the chaos created by the occupation persists, the more people will look to religious identity groups for protection. And as long as the occupation actually works with one group to abuse another, this process will accelerate. Already there are Sunnis and Shias driving each other out of certain neighborhoods. Still, I think that there is reason to believe that the reports of religious hatred are overblown. I have heard from various Iraqis who say that this is a Western myth along the same lines as WMDs and the ties to 9/11. The BBC recently reported that al-Sadr called for revenge on Sunnis following the recent bombing of a Shiite mosque. This was not true. He said no Sunni could have done this and all Iraqis should protest the occupation. And other sectarian leaders said the same. Al-Sistani said people should, quote, express their protests through peaceful means. The extent of their sorrow and shock should not drag them into taking actions that serve the enemies who have been working to lead Iraq into sectarian strife. It's possible that we will see sectarian violence generate intense anger, which will then be directed toward the long-standing source of anger, the U.S. occupation. 82% of Iraqis want the U.S. out, and 47% support attacks on U.S. troops. But our role is neither to analyze this, nor to wait for it to happen, nor to support violence. Our role is to make clear to the world that this is not a U.S. occupation. It is merely an occupation by Bush, Cheney, and the United States Congress. Yep. It does not belong to the American people. I saw an editorial recently in Le Monde, a French newspaper, that said the U.S. should get out, but get out in such a way that the jihadists don't think they won. But what could be more advantageous to uniting the Iraqi people than a collective victory? It seemed to have worked fairly darn well for our 13 colonies. I think that the U.S. military should get out in such a way that the Iraqis and the Americans and the world and the rule of law all win. And I think that more important than what happens in Iraq when our kids come home is whether or not international law survives the blatant violation that this war is. Otherwise, any nation is free to attack any other nation. This means the U.S. has to completely withdraw, that we have to leave neither bases nor corporations behind. Unless a democratic Iraq chooses freely to work with U.S. corporations. And we must not bomb Iraq after pulling our troops out. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, those guilty of launching this war must be held accountable. Yeah! 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 For what is to prevent the next one? And that begins with a process that may actually need to be achieved before we can end the war. Imagine that Congress votes to end funding for this criminal adventure. Will that end the war? 435 times Bush has signed bills and added a signing statement. That is over 100 times more than all previous presidents combined. These statements have made clear that torture is a form of self-defense, that revenge can be taken against someone who did nothing, that Congress no longer exists as a meaningful institution. How does a non-existent Congress end a war being waged by a unitary executive? One word, we can impeach. Yes. Those of us who support impeachment are a majority, according to polls. We can impeach. The Center for Constitutional Rights has laid out a strong case for four articles of impeachment. So strong, I believe, that if we do not act, we will effectively be removing impeachment from the Constitution. Usually, when I've given speeches over the past many months, I've liked to rattle off some of the latest pieces of evidence. Lately, I've run up against what seems to be a smoking gun fatigue. People are tired of the evidence and want to know what we are going to do about it. Yeah. Yeah. We must impeach. We can start by making sure that your Congress member is co-sponsoring House Resolution 635. That's HRES 635 for an investigation into grounds for impeachment. Then two other things you can do. Come to afterdowningstreet.org and find out what we're up to, and get in touch with local organizations, including PDA, Progressive Democrats of America. Is Dr. Bill in the house? He was going to raise his hand. Back of the aisle in front of me. Talk to Dr. Bill. Get involved. Thank you.